This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Have we been acting in accordance with our values and interests, or have we been acting in ways that are perhaps counterproductive, or if not counterproductive, not necessarily moving the needle?
That was Dan Ezenga of the Washington-based Africa Center for Strategic Studies on U.S.-Chad and regional connections. Details coming up. Also, Cairo says it intends to join South Africa's case, alleging Israel is committing genocide in Gaza. And analysts say whoever wins the U.S. presidency will face a stiff challenge to restore U.S. influence and prestige in Africa. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story, with Chad recently confirming Mohamed Deby as civilian president after a long-delayed election. Western powers are watching to see what role, if any, they will play in countering terror threats in the Sahel region. Henry Wilkins has more on the election, which follows a series of military coups in the region.
Mohamed Deby's election as Chad's president follows the 2021 death of his father, Idriss Deby, and marks the completion of the country's three-year transition from military rule. It also means the Deby family has ruled Chad since 1990. The younger Deby, the former military ruler, won the presidency last week. Western powers watched the results of the election closely, while critics denounced the vote as neither free nor fair. In the last 2 years, Sahel countries fighting insurgencies with militant groups linked to Islamic State and Al-Qaeda have severed security ties with Western partners, particularly France and the United States. Chad is the last of these countries to maintain a military link with those countries. Asked if Western nations will be eager to work with Deby now that he is a civilian and not a military ruler, one analyst replied,
He is more legitimate to a certain extent, both domestically and internationally. So there is less pressure that can be exerted on him to go one way or another. He has a mandate. Whether the elections were free and fair, it's a different question. This is debated. But at least he has this title. He is now the new elected president of Chad.
Some analysts say Deby is trying to leverage his power as the last remaining Western partner in the Sahel conflict to gain better contributions from them. Many Sahel countries have turned to Russia for military assistance in confronting terrorists. Days before the election, some of the US troops based in Chad were asked to leave. The United States has said it's keen to negotiate the return of the troops now that the election is over. Guvi thinks Washington may confront Deby on the issue, even as attention shifts to other parts of the continent.
I think in general we've seen interest waning since probably around 2021, shift focus away from the Central Sahel and towards countries on the Gulf of Guinea, coastal states.
Another analyst, Dan Ezenga of the Washington-based Africa Center for Strategic Studies, says he doesn't think the U.S. does want to further disengage from Chad, but may be looking to reassess how it engages with the region.
Have we been acting in accordance with our values and interests, or have we been acting in ways that are perhaps counterproductive, or if not counterproductive, not necessarily moving the needle in the direction that we would like to see in terms of improved security or improved development or improved socioeconomic conditions just for people in general.
Several analysts told VOA that despite Deby's victory, he is not immune to being ousted in a coup. Coups are increasingly common in the Sahel, leading to the nickname Africa's coup belt. This will also play into
how much to invest and, whether or not it's really of value to remain connected deeply to a partner that has just inherent instability baked in.
Analysts agree Deby's relationship with France, which has around 1,000 troops based in Chad, is unlikely to change, however. Henry Wilkins, VOA News.
As we just reported, Chad's junta chief, Mahamat Idriss Deby Itno, won last week's presidential election, extending his family's decades-long grip on power. The Electoral Commission said Deby won 61% of the vote, beating his prime minister, successor Masra, who only garnered 18.5%. International rights groups had said the May 6th vote was not expected to be free or fair after a crackdown on the opposition. Masra's party has alleged electoral fraud and violence and threats against him and his supporters. David Monda, professor of political science at City University of New York, discussed the problems that marred the election with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shinawi.
This is a very difficult transitional position for Chad at this time. Success Masra has very recently declared himself to have won the May 6th election. And I think this will raise a big level of contestation with General Idriss Deby, who will claim to have won. I also say that in the context that the government of Idriss Deby has not allowed electoral results to be published from each polling station. They can only publish results from regional tallies. So I think this also leads to this broader question of transparency, particularly in light of the fact that Success Masra has declared himself to have won the election, and it's going to be a very contested situation right now in Chad.
The election on Monday aimed to end 3 years of military rule, but opponents of the junta leader, Mohamed Idriss Deby, called for a boycott, dismissing it as fixed. Opposition figures have fled, been silenced, or joined forces with Deby Itno. His chief election rival and cousin, Yaya Diallo, was killed in February, and his party said he was shot point blank in the head in an army assault. What should the African Union and other regional organizations do to deal with this situation?
This is a very difficult situation for the African Union and also for countries in the region. In addition to Yahya Diallo being killed, let's also not forget the Constitutional Council disqualified many candidates who would have challenged President Idriss Deby, including Nassor Kourassmi and Rakis Ahmad. So the AU is really caught between a rock and a hard place, because it can suspend Chad from the Africa Union, but that also will move Chad closer to other military-led juntas that have taken over power unconstitutionally. The other challenge for the AU is many of the members in the AU are divided about what policy to take on democratization and this process of democratic backsliding. So aside from expelling Chad from the AU or suspending Chad, I'm not sure the AU can do very much more, because regional partners will not be willing to engage militarily to restore democracy in Chad. And the country itself is also engulfed in an area of incredible civil strife and civil wars. So we're thinking areas like Niger, Libya, Sudan, Central African Republic is a very unstable region. So any AU intervention militarily or diplomatic isolation of Chad in terms of association with the AU could actually be counterproductive.
The European Union on Tuesday criticized Chad's failure to allow nearly 3,000 civil society members financed by the EU to observe the presidential elections. What do you make of that?
EU criticism was not taken well by the Chadian government. Already, Chad has had a very antagonistic relationship with the West and with the EU in particular. And here I'm specifically talking about its former colonial master, France. So any kind of a confrontation with the EU will really be rejected by the regime in N'Djamena, because that for them will seem like neocolonialism from the Europeans and in particular from France. The other element which is unfortunate with this election is that the $4 million to run the election actually came from the European Union. Yet observers, local observers of the EU have not been accredited to monitor the elections. But I must add, lastly, these are part of the challenges we have in countries that they don't have a tradition of a peaceful handover of power, and countries that don't have a tradition of the military not engaging in politics. In these countries in the Sahel, where the military gets an appetite for political power, it's very difficult to get the soldiers to go back to their barracks. And I think this will be a difficult transition for Chad. I think President General Idriss Deby will be determined to stay in power for as long as he can, very much like his father did from 1990 until 2021. So I don't really think there's very much the EU can do at this time, because the army, the military is really behind General Idriss Deby, and that will be that.
That was David Manda, professor of political science at City University of New York, speaking with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawy. The Kenyan medical workers' strike is partially over. Doctors are back to work. Dr. Kahura Mudia, Secretary General for the Kenyan Medical Practitioners and Dentist Union, tells me it's still unfinished business. Salary issues for interns still are not resolved. Nurses have not given a strike notice, and clinical officials and lab workers are still out.
Yes, we are somehow satisfied with it. So maybe about 80% satisfaction, and the remaining matters were referred to court, so we are just waiting for the outcome on them. Members of the public are satisfied that the doctors are back to work and services are returning to normalcy. So the only matter that remains unsettled is the issue of the junior doctors whose salary had been frozen because of the illegal breach of the collective bargaining agreement. So that matter is still pending in the court. So it's to be heard at the end of this month, whereby we expect a favorable judgment, and then we can have the matters concluded.
Anything else pending except that?
That is the only matter that is pending. The other ones were the future collective bargaining agreement. So all parties, the employers at the county government, as well as the National Ministry of Health, have been advised to sit down with us and we agree on another collective bargaining agreement for the years 2024 to 2028. So that is what we are now headed to start meetings on.
And doctor, how about the posting of interns and their remuneration were among the key issues?
So the interns have not been posted. The intern salary and remuneration have not been agreed upon. And what we are sticking with as a union is the rate that is existing in the collective bargaining agreement, which is 7 years old. So that is a matter that is in court. So the court is supposed to determine whether what was decided by the ministry to slash salaries was legal or was illegal. But the union position is that that was very illegal. So the CBA cannot be breached by one party without following due procedure. So that's a matter that is still in the court.
Things are pending in court. So are you saying doctors and the nurses, everybody is back to work now?
No. Only the doctors are back to work. The nurses have given a strike notice. The strike is yet to begin. The clinical officers are out of work. They are also on strike. The medical lab and the occupied person are also out of work, out on strike because the issues are not resolved. Only the doctor's issues have been resolved for now. There's still a lot to be done, but remains pending.
Dr. Kahura Mudia, Secretary General for the Kenyan Medical Practitioners and Dentists Union, he spoke with me from Nairobi. Palestinians are fleeing the area around Rafah in southern Gaza ahead of Israel's threatened ground assault, as world leaders warn the attack will worsen the suffering of more than 1 million displaced people. United Nations Human Rights Chief Volker Turk said he cannot see how a full-scale invasion of Rafah can be reconciled with international humanitarian law. In a sign of growing international concern, neighboring Egypt issued its strongest objection yet to the Rafah offensive. On Sunday, Cairo said it intends to formally join South Africa's case at the International Court of Justice, alleging Israel is committing genocide in Gaza, an accusation Israel rejects. Israel invaded Gaza after the Hamas militants launched an attack in Israel on October 7th, killing about 1,200 people and taking more than 200 hostages. Nearly 40,000 Palestinians have died in the conflict. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Rwanda has denied claims by neighboring Burundi that it armed a rebel group accused of carrying out a grenade attack. Burundi's Interior Ministry blamed the Friday attack, which injured 38 people, on Red Tabara rebels and said the group was backed by Rwanda. The Associated Press says the rebel group denies responsibility for the attack. Relations between Rwanda and Burundi have deteriorated since early this year when Burundian President Evariste Ndayishimiye renewed accusations that Rwanda was funding and training the Red Tabara rebels who oppose the Burundi government. Foreign policy issues rarely motivate U.S. voters, and for most Americans looking at their choices for president in November, Africa policy is not a huge consideration. But analysts say whoever wins the presidency will face a stiff challenge in trying to restore America's influence and prestige on the continent of Africa, home to more than 1.2 billion people. We get the details from VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell in Washington.
Africa is not a monolith. It holds a dizzying wealth of history, resources, and traditions, and the full spectrum of struggles faced by many young nation states. And while the world's fastest growing continent plays a relatively small role on this stage, the person who next lives at the White House, whether that is former Republican President Donald Trump or Democratic President Joe Biden, will need to make policy choices that address the fast-changing economic and security conditions in Africa. Trump's past Africa stance, they say, can be summed up with one unprintable word he allegedly used to describe African countries and the Caribbean nation of Haiti. Michael Walsh is an Africa analyst at the Foreign Policy Research Institute.
I mean, he used famously this expletive to refer to a number of countries in Africa, and then he pursued a strategy and a policy that was really focused on trying to look at the burning issues in Africa, the security issues, the hot issues, and trying to stamp those out. But there really wasn't a larger grand strategy.
Biden has emphasized values-driven partnership on the continent. But much of that has been overshadowed by his administration's push against Russian influence in Africa and U.S. support of Israel. Cameron Hudson is a senior fellow in the Africa program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
I think Africans are also looking well beyond our policies in Africa, looking at the war in the Middle East, the war in Gaza, and U.S. support to Israel, for example, or the demands that African countries not do business with or engage in relations with Russia. So I think they're seeing a certain degree of hypocrisy in the Biden administration's policies globally, and that's not making them many new friends in Africa.
This is something South Africa highlighted in accusing Israel of breaching the United Nations Genocide Convention with a landmark case at the UN's top court. The Biden administration, when asked by VOA in January, dismissed the case as meritless. Analysts say this shot at America's credibility invites adversaries to take advantage. Mariette Mabrouk studies Egypt and the Horn of Africa at the Middle East Institute.
You're going to need that credibility because at one point someone is going to say, another superpower is going to step in and say, right, I am not being preferential. I earnestly do not care about human rights in any part of the world, and therefore, at least, that makes me better.
Hudson says the next U.S. president will meet an increasingly emboldened continent.
I think that any new American president is going to have to grapple with the declining influence that Washington has on the continent of Africa, and how much more African countries are asserting their own rights and privileges and speaking increasingly with one voice.
there may be a way to help turn that tide by tackling an oversight both candidates share. Candidates' wives have made official visits to Kenya, Namibia, Egypt, and Malawi, while President Biden dispatched Vice President Kamala Harris to Ghana, Tanzania, and Zambia. However, neither he nor Trump has paid the continent a visit as president. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
The death toll from the collapse of a building in South Africa has risen to 26, with 26 people still missing a week after the incident. The French news agency AFP says 4 bodies were recovered during the night and early hours today at the site in the southern city of George. Rescue teams have worked tirelessly since the 5-story apartment block, which was under construction, suddenly collapsed last Monday. 81 people, mostly construction workers, were at the site at the time. 29 people have been rescued so far. They include a man who was pulled out on Saturday after 116 hours under the rubble. Now, time for sports. I have in studio with me our VOA sports analyst, Mokbilia Baro, who's here to fill us about the BAL wrapping up in the Sahara Conference and the English Premier League title race. Welcome to African News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Hayes.
So, who finished at the top of the Sahara Conference?
So for the Sahara Conference, we had the Rivers Hoopers Basketball Club from Nigeria finishing off the conference with 4 wins and 2 losses. And then following suit is the local team, the local champs, AS Douan from Senegal. They finished off with 3-3 as well. Interestingly enough, you also have U.S. Monastir, the Tunisian side, who were the champions a couple of years back, BAL Season 2, and they finished off with the exact same record, but because of goal differential, they ended up coming in third, but they're also making it through to the next round. Should be fun.
So, Mokbil, what teams do you think have the best chance to win the BAL Season 4?
If I'm going to just go simply off of stats at the moment, I would say Rivers Hoopers, because they finished off at the top, they definitely have a different level of urgency about them. This is a team that, you know, realistically speaking, when they initially played a couple of years ago in their first season of the BAL, they were not that good of a team. They really, I don't even believe they even came out of their group phases. So to have that be what Nigerian basketball is remembered as, I'm sure they came into it with a different level, and finishing off at the top, they look like strong contenders. I would also say Al Ahly, the Egyptian side who won last season, finished off their group in the Nile Conference, 5 wins and only 1 loss. That's the most dominating performance so far in all of the conferences. And lastly, I would say one of the new teams, FUS Rabat from Morocco, debutant team, and they've won 3 wins and only 1 loss in that first go-around in the Kalahari Conference.
And lastly, Mokbil, the top 2 Premier League teams, Manchester City and Arsenal, both played over the weekend. What were the results, and did it change anything up on the top there?
So at the moment, Arsenal is still at the top. Manchester City have 2 games left, where Arsenal only have 1 game against Everton. They played Manchester United, and they were able to secure a victory at Manchester United's home at Old Trafford. So Arsenal is at the top at the moment with 86 points. Like I said, with 1 game left, if they win against Everton, they have potential to get to 89 points. Man City has 2 games left. They will be playing Tottenham tomorrow, and then their last game against West Ham. If they are to win all their games, they will end the season with 91 points, meaning they will finish 2 points ahead of Arsenal, even though Arsenal have had a stellar season.
Interesting. VOA sports analyst Mokbilia Baro, thank you for your input.
Thank you for having me.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Tiang Wong, Thanks for choosing The Voice of America.